Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
What's the best part of a Dunkin' run? The coffee? Is it the coffee or the $1 donut or $2 stuffed bagel minis or $3 sausage, egg, and cheese that you can add to it? The answer, of course, is yes. Time for a Dunkin' run. $3 offer available on sausage, egg, and cheese sandwich only. Excludes specialty donuts and fancies. Offer valid on medium or larger coffee. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer. Terms apply.
They were the heroes from the future. Teenagers protecting the universe from those that would sow the seeds of chaos. Each had unique powers and abilities. And though they often had their differences, they came together to save the day as the Legion of Superheroes. Now, you can be a part of their adventures and learn the history of the future in the Legion Clubhouse.
This week on the Legion Clubhouse, we know your secret. We know your secret.
Legion of Superheroes, Volume 3, Number 24. Published July 1986. Suspicion. Written by Paul Levitz with art by Greg LaRocque and Larry Malstedt. Synopsis. Sensor Girl must unmask or be discharged from the Legion. But Emerald Empress has an offer she might not be able to refuse. And Togetherness. Written by Paul Levitz with art by Norm Brayfogle, Mike DiCarlo, and Arnie Starr. Synopsis. Will Timberwolf and Lightning Lass achieve closure on their relationship? Or just extensive electrical burns?
Suspicion, Matthew. That is something that the Legion heirs are quick to point fingers at. Paranoia runs deep with the Legion of Superheroes.
You know what else? They gossip and gossip.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of like, I don't know, if we look at this from the hindsight of this is the 80s, and from the 50s through the 80s, there's one thing that they do with tropey kids, and that's that they form cliques and they gossip a lot. And if Sweet Valley Twins have taught us anything, it's that gossiping is how you find out what's going on in Sweet Valley High.
But it's interesting, the eight Legionnaires who are gossiping at the beginning of this issue are not like of the same clique, because, you know, Sun Boy is a star boy pal. And of course you have Block and Timberwolf, the dumb kid and the weird young kid. And it's really strange to me to see Ultra Boy and Magnetic Kid talking about, oh, what could this be? But then you also have Chameleon Boy, who's one of, at this point, I think Chameleon Boy, Colossal Boy, and Phantom Girl are the most tenured Legionnaires. So they've been here longer than anyone who's not a founder. They have been here for the whole time, and Chameleon Boy is all just like, you know, she's probably Supergirl's clone. And not only that, she can probably hear you right now, so maybe stop gossiping about her.
He's like feeding right into the paranoia. So, I think that it's not weird that it is these aren't the same cliques and they're talking about it. It's that
right. It
is such a concern amongst all the Legionnaires that
it crosses
those boundaries, and that's why they're all willing to talk about it.
This is kind of like, and if you look at it, I'm thinking this is like the Legion cafeteria or something.
Yeah, it's a hangout.
Because it looks like they've got like food. It looks like Chameleon Boy has a tray. I'm wondering if it's like lunchroom gossip.
Probably.
So you've got the burnouts table, and then Shrinking Violet over there is at the cool goth lesbians table. And then you've got, you know, Big Jock Ultra Boy and his cute girlfriend cheerleader. I'm just like, yeah, okay, that makes sense. I'm with you now. Okay.
Yeah. And then we get a check in on Karate Kid 2, even though they don't call him Karate Kid 2.
Not yet.
Also, I think that Polar Boy's costume is really impractical.
You know, those over-the-shoulder things are actually, they're like the coils on the back of your fridge. You know how your refrigerator has those coils to like redistribute
energy? And when Rob Liefeld does it, everyone's like, look how impractical that is. You can't even see if someone's attacking you from the side. But hey, yeah, sure, go ahead. And let's let Greg LaRocque or Larry Malstedt do this exact same thing and people give it a pass. I see the hypocrisy in comics. I see you out there.
I will say this about LaRocque. If we go back to issue 15, where Steve Lytle debuted this costume, they weren't as enormous. And if you look at the Lytle drawings of the same costume, it's not quite as huge and as bulky. So I feel like it's one of those things where, you know, the story of why Wolverine has his current mask, right?
I do not. Is he a member of the Legion of Superheroes?
Stay with me. This makes perfect sense. In 1975, Wolverine was a character who existed and was created by Herb Trimpe, and he had a specific mask. But for the cover of Giant Size X-Men number one, Gil Kane, a different artist with a different style, had to draw Wolverine's mask. And so he drew it as the weird Batman mask with that center thing down the middle, because he either didn't like the other mask or didn't want to draw the other mask. And that's why Wolverine has that mask, because Gil Kane and Herb Trimpe are different artists with different styles. I feel like Steve Lytle and, you know, our Malstedt LaRocque team are different artists, as we can see, you know, from their take on Block, who's, you know, big and chunky, but not quite as, you know, smooth and rock-like as you expect from like the Steve Lytle. It's that transition point between artists that does the weird things. Because if you look at like Migg's costume, Karate Kid 2, aside from the fact that I'm really uncomfortable with the color palette they've chosen for this character who is coded as Asian, I feel like his costume also doesn't look like something that Greg LaRocque would have chosen to draw if he designed the character.
Well, and part of the reason why we see Karate Kid's costume this way is because over there at the Marvel, they've got Iron Fist. You know the Iron Fist? Are you familiar with him and his costume?
Are you asking me if I'm familiar with a comic book character?
Yeah. Well, stay with me now. Okay. So Iron Fist is this man who goes to Kunlun and he learns the way of the fist. And he gets a big old dragon tattoo on his chest because he hugged it out with a dragon. And then he got the power of the Iron Fist. If you look at what Karate Kid has, he also has his costume cut down to the navel. And if you look closely, it looks like there's a dragon insignia going across his chest. Also, his collar is not as high, but you see what I'm doing. So different artists' interpretations lead to duplication of effort throughout time. So
and tall collars are a thing for martial artists. You know,
well, yeah, time. I suppose. I mean, I've never seen Bruce Lee popping a high collar like that, but okay.
No, I don't mean in real life. I just mean in comics. If you look at like Karate Kid and Iron Fist and the Steel Dragon and all of those guys, they had the real high pop. Elvis, another example of a high collar.
Billy Batson and Captain Marvel Jr. Sure. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Captain Marvel, of course, Shazam, the S in Shazam actually stands for Saul Bellow, which gives him the power of a really good writer. But one of those in there probably stands for Bruce Lee. I think it's the Z stands for Bruce Lee. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Anyway, Mentala or Mental La is missing.
Mentala. Mentala.
Mental.
I am Mentala.
She is missing.
The Fresh Maker.
She has taken all of her stuff with her. And so everyone's just assuming that, I don't know, maybe she was kidnapped. I don't know. She took all her stuff with her. Maybe she decided to leave your organization. Who's to say? This is really dumb because here's the thing. Between this issue and the next issue, the president, Element Lad, goes and confronts Censor Girl and says, hey, listen, you and I should have a conversation about your secret identity. And she's like, screw you, man. I'm out of here. And he's like, oh, crap. Did she just leave and go join the Fatal Five? This is a bad idea. Meanwhile, Mentala is missing and all of her gear is missing. And their thought is maybe somebody kidnapped her. And maybe she dropped out. Did you think about that? It is a really weird balance, or it's a weird opposite effect that's going on here where, oh, look what we have done to Censor Girl. Oh, no. What happened to Mentala? And that never the two have they crossed paths to think, oh, maybe she just washed out, dropped out. and she's on her own, and that's okay.
It is interesting, though, when you look at that, because that is a really valid point. And then I think about the people who are having this conversation, and the people who are having this conversation of, oh, man, she might have been kidnapped, our bouncing boy, who literally tried out for the team three times and kept coming back. And you have Colossal Boy, who's been a Legionnaire literally his entire life, and Wildfire, whose entire identity is, I was once the Legion leader and I yell a lot. And, of course, Polar Boy, who's 26 now but has wanted to be a Legionnaire since he was 12. I wonder if it's just, you know, this may be me overthinking it, but it's just these characters cannot imagine someone not wanting to be in the Legion or be at the Legion Academy to try and join the Legion.
Yeah. We also get to see a real quick shot of a club on Rimbor about some shenanigans going on there and some Legionnaire apparently showing up and causing trouble and killing somebody. But I want to point out the sexy robot lady that the page starts out with. And if people who don't know, when you see that, maybe today's kids don't understand this, but way back in 1984, 2 years before this issue was published, the very first CG commercial, all CG commercial, debuted during the Super Bowl. And it featured, and it, I kid you not, the name of this character is CG Sexy Robot. Ooh. CG Sexy Robot, created by Robert Abel and Associates. They produced this for the Super Bowl, and that came out in January of 20th of 1984. See, back in the day, kids, the Super Bowl was actually in January and not the end of February like it is now. But this character was unique in that during the Super Bowl, the sexy CG sexy robot is talking about this great invention that will survive 3,000 years into the future. It will survive a trip to Jupiter and back. And this amazing thing is the aluminum can. Yes, the very first all CG commercial was for canned food by the canning industry of America. So that is why we see this robot here on the cover. That robot also appeared on Omni magazine, I want to say. Or at least then, what's the Asimov book magazine? I think it was Omni. Wasn't that Asimov? Or I'm thinking of something else.
I can't remember.
But that robot appeared on a lot of places after that commercial, and people just flipped out about it. So I think the only reason why we have this scene is so that we can get CG Sexy Robot from 1984. Oh, also, the one in the commercial is silver and chrome, not gold,
right?
Plated. So there you go.
This one kind
the
of
more you know.
Yeah, this one. What color was Maria from Metropolis?
Oh, she's black and white.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
See, in my head, she's gold.
I think in the colored versions, they've colored her a bronzish color.
Mm-hmm.
If you go and look at a colorized, so it could be gold slash bronze slash copper. But yeah, no, definitely not from that movie. Definitely CG Sexy Robot, because that commercial played forever. They had to get their money out of that thing. Yeah, so there you go. Also, there's a Captain, maybe not in this issue. Oh, yeah, no. In another club,
you
would get to see female Captain America telling some dude to just hug a Protean. Hug a Protean, pal!
She is wearing a Plexus Ranger costume from American Flag, Howard Chaykin's American Flag.
Yeah.
Have you ever read American Flag?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I've got all those issues, man. American Flag is great.
That's what she's wearing.
Yeah,
she's wearing like Captain America, the American Flag.
Yeah. Meanwhile, at this other club, Quizlet is there, and they're like, hey, we don't allow your kind here, which is interesting coming from the pig-faced Ugnaught. But definitely a Star Wars reference. But while Quizlet is running around with, what's the Legionnaire that makes you sick?
Infectious Laugh?
Yeah, Infectious Laugh.
I'm looking at that, and all I can see is the Bendisverse version of Shrinking Violet from 2022. No.
Yeah, I guess. But anyway, Quizlet bumps into ba-bum, ba-bum, Dream Girl, and you're hugging somebody that's not your husband. Ba-bum, ba-bum.
I think that's Tony Stark.
Could be Tony Stark. Anyway, how awkward is that? We will never know, because meanwhile, The Emerald Empress has told a, what's his name? Camrag. Got to be very careful saying his name. You got to, Camrag has been tasked to go and kill some Legion members, and he did not. And so she eradicates him because she's trying to form a new Fatal Five.
It's gross. She actually rips out his mechanical eye and like squishes his whole body.
Yeah.
Have we seen Camrag before? I feel like we've seen.
No.
Okay.
No, this is one of those Camrag. We hardly knew ye.
And who cares?
Yeah.
But she's also sleeping with the Persuader.
I don't know if she's sleeping with the Persuader.
We shall have a new Fatal Five to satisfy my desires, and you know they are insatiable. ... She's sleeping with the Persuader. The Persuader is her boy toy.
Yeah, probably. So yeah, conversation continues about who Sensor Girl is, and meanwhile we get introduced to Flare. And it's interesting that we find out that she is a black woman, because, when she's on fire, she's all red and yellow. And then
she's
all of a sudden, and then all of a sudden you just see in the very next panel, like, oh, here's a black woman, wearing the same bikini. And because the hairstyles are so different, it almost took me a minute to go, oh, wait a minute. That's the same person.
Right. She's powered down.
Yeah.
And I really, on the one hand, I like the fact that this is a visible person of color, a very dark-skinned character, especially for the Legion. But I also feel like this is a visible person of color who is darn near naked. I mean, her costume is...
Well, many
Mike
of the,
Grell would look at that and be like, wow, maybe many, we many should, you know...
Characters, I mean, we are at the high point of horny 80s with, you know, the... We talked about how in the 60s and 70s, Playboy came along and opened up the idea of sexuality. But by the 1980s, you really start to push the boundaries of sex in the movies, especially going over things that would not be considered typical sex. You look at something like what's the remake of Rear Window that came out in the 80s?
The one with Shia LaBeouf.
No. That came out in the 2000s. I'm talking about the one in the 80s that came out. Body Double. The movie Body Double is the one that I'm thinking of, where it really leans into a lot of taboos. And that wasn't the only movie. I mean, a lot of, you have Skinamax After Dark. You have pretty much anything goes with the release of VHS and pornography starting to take off. So seeing somebody dressed in a skimpy costume / bikini where seems pretty on target for the time period. So, yeah, that's what I got there.
Yeah.
And so anyway, as we said, Element Lad chases off Sensor Girl and she's going to go join the Fatal Five, because that's what you do. The minute that you decide that you don't want to be the team, you're just looking for an excuse to get out.
Well, and it's interesting to me. It is really weird that we started out with these thought processes of, oh, could it be Supergirl? Could it be something? And then we've come to a point now where there aren't really any hints. There aren't really any clues for a while. It's just she's here and everybody's mad about it. And then Element Lad is just like, okay, I know you told me that you can't and you won't and you're never going to tell me, but I need you to tell me. What? Okay.
Never gonna do it. Never gonna do it. Never gonna do it.
He's just, it's a very awkward moment for Element Lad because he's usually more circumspect, more thoughtful than this. It's weird.
I think he's just feeling the pressure from everybody else on the team because he knows it's becoming a distraction for everybody. And that if it's a distraction for everyone, then it means the team doesn't function at 100%. So might as well try to nip this in the bud and show that you're a good leader and see if at least you can assuage people's fears. And Sensor Girl's like, nope, not going to have any of it. And off she goes. Meanwhile, Timberwolf is a jerk.
He is. Oh, my God.
So when someone breaks up with you, ladies and gentlemen, The last thing that you want to do is stalk them. And that's kind of what Timberwolf does in this little backup story where he and Lightning Lass go off on an adventure together. And Lightning Lass says, boy, it sure was great for Element Lad to team us up and we could just have a good old fashioned adventure. And he's like, no, I paired us up because I want to tell you that I love you. And she's like, no way, dude, back off. I'm a woman now. Zoom. And then that's the end of the story.
I actually feel like, aside from the fact that she's like shooting electricity like a Category 5, her point is relatively sane and solid. She literally tells him, I stood with you. I helped you. I supported you through all of your nonsense. And the one time I asked you to support me, you're like, no, the Legion is more important. It makes sense from her perspective.
Oh, yeah.
And it doesn't feel like the kind of crazy nonsense. Like, I don't necessarily want to put this all on Levitz. I don't want to put this on DC editorial, but there's a tendency in the 80s for the female characters to come across as really like over the top, blah, just flying off the handle all over the place. And this is a moment where Ayla makes a clear point and says to him, this is how I felt. We're done here. You messed up. And also I can nuke you from space. But I do love the fact that she admits that she still loves him. That's kind of nice.
Does she admit that she still loves him? I think she's saying at one time I still loved you, but now I don't. No, she says that as flying off. She goes, yeah. I love you, but I can't take you back. I just can't. And that's the end of that issue. Hooray. Oh, by the way, we were supposed to get her secret identity. We do not. Ugh, dang you, DC, you know, making us wait a whole other month. Maybe, who knows? Matthew, you know what I like more than talking about Legion of Superheroes?
What's that?
I like real life superheroes. And you know who are our superheroes? All of our listeners who join us over at Patreon at patreon.com/majorspoilers. That's right. You, dear listener, could be our hero right now and join our growing group of awesome people over at patreon.com/majorspoilers. So listen, the government did some government stuff, and now it's going to cost us more to produce this show with rising costs, etc. If we can't hit our marker by June, we won't get to find out what happens in the Archie Legion. We may not even get to 5 years later at the rate we're going. Blame the government. Don't blame us. But here's how you can help. You can head to patreon.com/majorspoilers. We only need between now and the end of April, 50 of you, 50 of our dear listeners to sign up at the silver level membership or higher. If you find value in this show, if you enjoy this show, if you want to hear this show continue far into the future so that we can get all the way back around to the what's-his-face's run, Brian Michael Bendis's run on the Legion, then by gosh, head over to patreon.com/majorspoilers. Again, patreon.com/majorspoilers, and be one of our heroes. And here's the thing. If you sign up from now on, going forward, anybody who signs up at the silver level or higher, and when you sign up, you send a little note that says, hey, long live the Legion, then we will come up with a creative Legion of Superheroes name for you that we will record into our record books for all time. And it will be ensconced right here on this podcast as well, because we will give you that shout out. So when you sign up and join our superheroes at patreon.com/majorspoilers, if you're a Legion of Superheroes fan, if you love Legion Clubhouse, just put in there, long live the Legion. And I'll make sure to note that we are going to give you a super cool name and a shout out right here on the show. It's the least we could do for all that you do for us. Patreon.com/majorspoilers.
Legion of Superheroes, Volume 3, Number 25, Revelation. Published August 1986. Written by Paul Levitz with art by Greg LaRocque, Mike DiCarlo, and Arnie Starr. Synopsis: Sensor Girl is revealed. Is she Supergirl or someone even more shocking?
I don't know if DC is really going to pull the mask off of Censor Girl or not. The title of this one is Revelation. Finally, Censor Girl revealed. I have a feeling we're not going to find out who it is.
Oh, I bet we do.
So we do know from the last issue that there is a new Fatal Five forming. And so we have the Persuader. We have Emerald Empress. Yes. We have Flare. Mm-hmm. And we have a character named Caress.
Mm-hmm.
And those are who we know right now. Flare, we met last issue. Have we met Caress before?
This is the first time we've seen Caress.
Okay.
To my knowledge, anyway, I have not seen Caress before, but she is also an interesting case because I feel like we are supposed to read Caress as an Asian character. Do you get that as well?
Here's the problem with coloring. Okay.
Yeah.
You have, especially in the 1980s, you have a limited color palette and you can only do so much with this. If you're wanting to do a black character, you don't use black ink. You use a really, really dark red or a brown to create someone who is a black character. If you are creating someone who's Caucasian, you use this weird peachy color, even though everybody's skin tones are different. Anyone who is coded as Caucasian has the peachy color look. You know, it's the 64 colors of crayons right in there. If you're coding someone who is Native American, well, then we better add a lot more red into this. And if we're trying to do somebody who's Asian, well, good luck, because we have seen Asian skin tones in comic books go from very racist yellowish, sickly yellowish color for Yellow Peril all the way up to bright red in about a decade and a half when Robin's nemesis arrives in the form of Cheshire, right? Isn't it Cheshire? Or is it Lady Lynx? I forget which one of those two it is.
Oh, yeah. Cheshire fights Arsenal. The Lynx is the one who fights Jason. Or not Jason, the Tim Drake
Tim
Robin.
Tim Drake Robin. Yeah. And she is like bright red. So when it comes to skin tones, be aware that I don't think that it is intentional racism, especially by the time we get to the 90s, it shouldn't be intentional racism. This time period, it might still be a little bit of unintended racism going on. But, you know, again, because you're working with the limited skin tones.
Yeah.
If you try to portray this character as anything else other than, you know, Caucasian, you're going to have trouble mixing up a color that is going to work. Now, does that mean that it's right? No. Does that mean that they, you know, that everybody comes in a variety of different colors? Yes. Yes, we do. And it's just, I think a lot of it, certainly when we look at the 1930s and we look at the Fu Manchu character and we look at a lot of the Yellow Peril characters that came out that time, yes, yellow was definitely done with racist intent. Here, I don't read this character as Asian. The character does have a more of a yellowish skin tone than the peachy-colored Persuader and peachy-colored Emerald Empress. But I don't read it as Asian, and I certainly don't read it with racist intent. It would be very different if, you know, the problem that we have with Dawnstar, who's on the very next page, problem that we've had from Dawnstar from the very beginning is she's specifically coded as a Native American, and that she is very specifically coded with tropes of Native peoples. You know, the Cher-inspired costume, her peoples living in teepees or wigwams,
And being the fringed buckskin and the headbands.
And the headbands and all of that stuff. Beyond just the color of this, of Caress's skin, there's only one other way that you could make this super racist. And that is not, thankfully, in this issue.
I did check one thing.
Yeah.
Apparently her real name is in fact Kitsian, Chitsian. So, yeah, I think she is meant to be a character of Chinese descent.
Yeah.
Now, that said,
Well, you said Asian. So Asia.
Right.
What's that?
Yeah. You're 100% right in that her skin color is the exact same as Wildfire's orange suit on the next page.
Yeah. 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 So, you know, I don't think this is done with racist intent. It would be very different if they leaned into using certain letter replacements for the character. Mm-hmm. Then that would be pretty racist. We do see that, you know, one of the nice things, even though we do have now two characters that are bad or evil, but we also have the Persuader and Emerald Empress and Soon Censor Girl. Oops, spoiler alert. And Mentala. But we do see that at least in this series, they have been trying to address the people of many, many colors. Now, granted, we got rid of Tyrok, unfortunately.
Right.
But, you know, we look at the president of the United Planets, and he is of South Asian descent. And so, you know, they color his skin very differently than they color somebody who is supposedly Chinese. Mm-hmm. So, I do have problems when it becomes too racist. And certainly if this was a 1960s comic, then yes, there would be a lot more stuff that is just like full of uncomfortableness. But I don't really feel that here.
Yeah. And I want to say that we could give them credit for the Persuader, who is canonically Asian. But I also feel like the way he's drawn here, they forgot that.
Yeah, I was going to say this. In this series, he's kind of drawn like a doofus.
Yeah, he's just a big square-jawed dummy. I mean,
he might as well be
like Jethro Bodine.
I can't remember if it is in this issue or the previous issue where they have a close-up of his face, and it's just this really big Jethro chin and bald head, and it's just like, ugh, okay.
Yeah, that was in the previous issue.
Yeah.
This one has some of that going on, though, with everybody, because I hate LaRocque and Mike DiCarlo's block.
Oh, with his stubby legs?
Stubby legs and a big, round, goofy head. And his proportions are all funky, like the Thing. And I'm just like, you want to keep this character away from the Thing.
Right.
And he didn't look like this last issue. So I can't help but think that some of this is DiCarlo's influence on the pencils.
He only appears in one panel, I think, in this issue, if I'm not mistaken. And so that is probably, you know, being the only place that we get to see him. They're just like, I don't know. How do you draw the Rock? I don't know. Here's a drawing that I did of the Thing, Ben Grimm, back in the day. Oh yeah. Let's just do that pose. Okay. Well, let's make him wide and squatty like a Ben Grimm. So I could probably see some of that happening as well, but we also get to see, other changes. We've talked about how the villains have been amping up as we end the crisis, and Manos Hands of Fate shows up, and he's got a totally different look than what we have seen from him before. And he's much more powerful than he was before.
Well, Mano has always been one of those characters whose power level fluctuates depending on the situation, because in his first appearance, they're like, he destroyed his home planet with one hand.
Yeah.
But here we see him, you know, just kind of go absolutely nuts, melt Brainiac 5's force shield, which I don't think that's how energy works.
I don't think he knocked it out. He didn't burn it out completely. He said, I'm just going to keep hitting your shield until
disintegrating the force fields.
Yeah.
And in his defense, I mean
the Persuader's axe can slice a shadow or slice darkness.
Right.
So, you know, Manos being able to eradicate a force field is not too much of a stretch.
True. And he does get taken down by the 1-2 punch of Timberwolf and Ultra Boy. Yeah. And as much as I hate Mono, I want Mono to be beaten senselessly. There are not very many people who I think really would ever want to face the 1-2 punch of Ultra Boy and Timberwolf. I mean, that's literally like, hey, the two biggest jocks have said they're going to beat you up in the parking lot. That's where you walk out the back door and sneak through the fields home. Yeah. Not that I know anything about this.
Anyway, they ended up in their encounter with Manos Hands of Fate because Dawnstar, tracking Censor Girl, went to Shambhala, and then the trail went cold there. You could say it went dead there. And Brainiac 5 is like, oh, my poor fallen friend, And we read the Interlac, it is Karate Kid's grave. And then that's when Manos Hands of Fate attacks. And then Brainiac starts putting things together. And he's like, wait a minute. Empty costume. Empty costume. Karate Kid has all of these powers. Oh, my gosh. That can only mean one thing. Meanwhile, the Emerald Empress and everybody starts attacking because they feel like they need to have. Emerald Empress is attacking because the trail leads them to our missing Mentala and to her home planet of Beverly Hills. And that's where the Emerald Empress has been hiding out. And so she is able to use her new Fatal Five to attack. And there is a mighty battle, in which case Censor Girl falls and Emerald Empress rips off her mask and reveals it to be Princess Projectra.
Projectra. That last page puzzled me when I was young.
Because you didn't know who Princess Projectra was?
I actually didn't know. But you get to a point where literally they rip off the mask, or she like hits her with a beam and it looks like it annihilates her costume.
Right.
And she's wearing the second costume underneath, but it also changed her hair color.
Mm-hmm.
So I did not, you know, at the time I didn't know Projector's powers well enough to know that she was clearly just projecting her suit over her other suit. But that was it's a really beautiful last page reveal of Projectra. And it, you know, it does make Projectra's costume look good and look regal in a way that certain Projectra suits have not, in that it's not quite as, I believe the internet calls it stripperific, but it's not quite as brief as we've seen before. It looks really good.
Yeah.
But then I'm also like, why is it not Supergirl?
Yeah.
It was supposed to be super. They told me it was super.
Now, all the clues. I mean, if you're Brainiac 5, a 12th level intellect, then you saw all of these clues come together and you solved it probably a page before Brainiac did, because you are that 12th level intellect. But this issue had some pretty good. Okay. If you say so. I think that this issue was really pretty good because I enjoyed the fight scenes. I enjoyed seeing another member of the Fatal Five come out and just be totally crazy. And I like, when Emerald Empress is like, to me, my Fatal Five, and again, making the circle complete once again. But yeah, I enjoyed this issue. It's much better than the previous one. And these two together are certainly much better than the last maybe six or eight issues that we've read.
Terrific. I do like the fact that this issue makes the Fatal Five feel dangerous in a way that they haven't for a while, because remember, each one of them was rated as a Legion level threat on his or her own.
Right.
Back in 66. And when they teamed up together, it was like an unheard of crisis. But the last few times we've seen them, you know, we knocked out Manos, the Hands of Fate, and then we knocked out Dwayne The Rock Johnson. And, you know, we see these characters just get kind of punked out a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And now all of a sudden they're dangerous again. The Persuader is dangerous. Emerald Empress is a huge, huge threat. I like seeing that.
And the rest.
Even though your point about, you know, people getting jammed up is interesting.
Yeah. And the rest. Don't forget Flare, Mentala, and Caress. Whose powers are, I'm fine with all of their powers, but they don't feel like they are the same. So, for example, we don't know the extent of Caress's powers, but or Flare's powers, really. I mean, she creates light, and Mentala does mental things. But they just do not feel like they could destroy half a planet with one hand, or slide in to your wrestling ring as the crowd goes wild. Like The Rock Johnson, or even just have half the mental capabilities of Validus. So I don't know. These new three recruits better step up if they hope to prove that they could be a new Fatal Five.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you, especially since Mentala was proven to not be quite as adept as Telus, who has stated on multiple occasions he's not as adept as Saturn Girl. So essentially, we've got a character who is definitely less powerful than the character who's a replacement for a character who was part of a team that any one of the original Fatal Five could have killed. Yeah, I can definitely see it. But this is also nice for me because we're finally seeing the new kids in these last two issues just sort of blending in. It's no longer, here's the five newbies going, we're weird. Telos is in the team and he saves them when Emerald Empress attacks.
Yeah.
Magnetic Kid gets into a fight.
Yeah.
With his there are actually a couple of screaming fights.
Yeah.
That I really appreciate.
Polar Boy may die. He's been built up to saying, oh man, if I would have just done this when I tried out, I could have been a real Legion member for a long time. And look how great I am. And look at my cool costume. This dude gonna die. That's what you do when you're about to kill somebody, is you make them have these really cool epic moments where they're icing Emerald Empress down, or is it caress down into an ice block, and then have your persuader chop your fuzzy puffy shoulder pads off, and then you're dead because your coolant escapes.
Your radiator coolant. But I will say this: the one thing that I loved most about these two issues, and as I was doing it, I thought of you, because there's a point where Brainiac, Element Lad, and Chameleon Boy, friends of many, many years, get into a screaming match, a three-way screaming match, reminding you that nobody screams at you like people that you've known forever. Why would I scream at you? I don't know.
I'd never scream
at you. I can't imagine.
I've never screamed.
Oh, yeah. Don't you have an alarm on your phone for every 6 months we need to have a yelling match?
No, we don't yell. I may talk sternly to you, but that's not the same as yelling.
Yeah.
So there you go.
But I really do like that moment where we are reminded that these are old friends and old colleagues, and they can have those heated discussions, and then everybody walk away and come back, and everybody's cool and they're fine because they've been friends for, I don't know, let's call it 15 years, whatever it is in universe time. It's just weird.
That wraps it up for this installment of the Legion Clubhouse. Matthew, what did we learn this week?
We learned that if there's nothing inside your costume, then you're probably going to be a big swerve at the end.
I think we also learned that Matthew has an alarm set every 6 months so he can pick a fight with me.
I didn't say pick a fight. I said prepare for a fight. And most importantly, we learned that Sunboy apparently knows how to play chess.
Thank you so much for joining us this week on the Legion Clubhouse. Again, back your player up just a little bit and go back and listen to the mid-segment where I'm talking about becoming one of our heroes at patreon.com/majorspoilers. We look forward to giving you a shout out in the future. We might even call you our hero, man.
And I'm the Ruby Emperor.
The Legion Clubhouse is a production of Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC, and is produced by Steven Schleicher. Your hosts were Matthew Peterson and Steven Schleicher. You can follow Matthew at Mighty King Cobra and Steven at Major Spoilers. You can follow this podcast on Twitter at Legion Clubhouse. If you have questions or comments, send them to podcast@majorspoilers.com. I'm Jason Inman. Until next time, eat it, Grandpa.
This podcast is copyright 2024 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.
This is your moment. Your moment to move forward and make progress. It's time to see where an education can take you. For over 130 years, Strayer University has been at the forefront of change, offering programs that help students like you get ahead and stay ahead, so you can keep striving. Visit strayer.edu to learn more. Strayer University is certified to operate in Virginia by CHEV.
What's the best part of a Dunkin' Run? The coffee? Is it the coffee or the $1 donut or $2 stuffed bagel minis or $3 sausage, egg, and cheese that you can add to it? The answer, of course, is yes. Time for a Dunkin' Run. $3 offer available on sausage, egg, and cheese sandwich only. Excludes specialty donuts and fancies. Offer valid on medium or larger coffee. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer terms apply.